need for investment, international collaboration, improved monitoring, and data sharing to improve early warning systems. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Freedom. My name is M1. I'm half of the legendary Tell It Like It Is, Everything Is Political rap duo Dead Prez. And this is WPFW, Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. El Distrito Colombia here on this Friday, September 19, 2025. Also heard on LatinoMediaCollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we spend the hour with freelance writer Arturo Dominguez to discuss the fallout following the shooting death of far-right activist and organizer Charlie Kirk, as well as the whitewashing of the hate and bigotry that define his life and career. And so I wish we could meet under better circumstances, Arturo, but we have a lot to discuss here. Welcome back to the show.
Man, as always, I appreciate it, Oscar. This is going to be I have a feeling this one's going to be a little intense.
Yes, it is. So let's make it clear right now at the top of the show that as we record this conversation on Saturday, the latest on this case is that a suspect was in custody for the killing of far-right activist Charlie Kirk. A motive has not yet been established. So anything beyond what we learned this past Friday is purely speculation. But we're not here to talk about speculation right now. And I have to say this at the top of the hour because it sort of reflects the sad state of affairs of where the country is right now, that we absolutely condone what took place this past week with the death of Charlie Kirk. It's sort of a perverse thing to say right now, but it just reflects the sad state of affairs right now for the country as a whole, that this sort of political violence is, dare I say, being normalized, but it's certainly happening. And it just shows how we need to tone down the harsh political rhetoric that we've seen all too much, I would say, in the last 10 years alone. And so I find it very hard right now to, as a Latino, as somebody, myself and Arturo, and I'm not trying to put words into Arturo's mouth, but it's hard to shed tears in a show like this for an avowed white nationalist like Charlie Kirk. Again, we're not here mourning the individual, but we are sad for the current state of affairs of the country right now as it pertains to political conversation. So Arturo, as you can see, I'm having a hard time sort of starting this conversation, but you wrote a brief article on your Substack page of Charlie Kirk's death. Can you give us your initial thoughts on what took place this month and what you described as sort of a whitewashing of his hate and bigotry here?
Well, the initial thought was just absolute shock, right? You know, when the news first broke, it took a little bit to find out that he actually passed. When I heard he got shot, I honestly didn't think it was going to be that serious because his little college tour things, I assumed he had a ton of security, and I assumed with, you know, the crowd at least being like, say, half pro Charlie Kirk, that the odds of him being seriously injured were minimal, right? That was my initial reaction. But then, you know, I was doing a live on Substack with Dr. Allison Wiltz, and she had just done the Piers Morgan show, and they were talking about the black man who, you know, killed that white woman on the thing, and, you know, they were trying to make it sound like some issue with the black community towards white people and all that. So we were debriefing from that show. I helped her prepare for it and everything, and that's when the news broke. And by the time we were done with our live, which was probably about 45 minutes after we heard about Kirk, we found out he died. And, you know, shortly after, the video starts coming out everywhere. And, man, that's a pretty traumatic thing to see. I don't recommend anybody look for it.
No, don't look at the video, no.
No, it's not, I mean, it's just terrifying. And it starts coming out later that it was a sniper and all this stuff. And I thought, holy cow, like, for real. Like, I went from, I thought maybe something happened on the ground in Charlie Kirk's proximity to somebody trying to shoot him from like 200 or 300 yards away. So like all of a sudden it became a lot more serious. And sure, we need to be talking about political violence in this country, but we need to also acknowledge the fact that Charlie Kirk is one of the reasons why it is the way it is. He essentially normalized killing people, right? Like he had said something to the effect of like, you know, people are going to have to die in order for us to have our Second Amendment. And when I heard those words the first time he said that, I thought to myself, man, you never put that stuff out there. I'm a, you know, cause and effect. I was, you know, the raised Buddhist since I was like, well, you know, mostly Catholic at first. But by the time I was 13, my mom turned Buddhist and everything's about karma. And, you know, you get what you give type situation. And like even a lot of my family who are Ifa, right, which is like 5,000-year-old religion from Yoruba in Africa, which is Nigeria now, you know, it's the same thing, cause and effect. And like in spiritual stuff like that, you don't put that kind of stuff out there, because next thing you know, you become one of those people. He said it's just, you know what I mean? So Charlie Kirk didn't deserve what happened to him, but he did die in an environment of his own making, of escalated political rhetoric, of hate, of just all this talk of civil war, and the leftists and the Democrats are, you know, all this stuff. Like he painted anybody who wasn't a white nationalist as an enemy of the state, as an enemy of the white supremacist state. And like so much of what he said is huge in the white nationalist circles. And it's crazy because when you look around, like neo-Nazis hate him because he's not conservative enough, because he supports Israel. And early indications are showing, and granted, there's still more information to be had, but it seems like this kid was one of them neo-Nazi groupers, the ones that follow Nick Fuentes. And a lot of his social media, people are finding a lot of stuff And then his grandmother, the kid's grandmother, did an interview. I want to say it was Newsweek, somebody. And she said the whole family's MAGA. So like this whole debate about leftists being the violent ones and leftists being responsible for Charlie Kirk's death. Not only was that premature, as usual, for MAGA, right? Because anytime a mass shooting or anything happens, it's immediately a trans Democrat, something like that, right?
Yeah, like I said before, it's all speculation at this point. So I'm pretty sure that in the coming weeks ahead, there may be more information as to the motive. We still don't know. We only know as much as anyone else with regards to the information that came out last Friday. And so I do have that clip of Kurt's comments on mass shootings. I will play it, I promise you, just to show people, you know, the type of person he was, who, for those who didn't know who he was. But as an example of Charlie Kirk's bigotry towards immigrant, I do have a clip from Charlie's YouTube show earlier this year with regards to immigration. So let's take a listen.
I'm telling you, everybody, we need to do Project 10 million. Project 10 million is removing the 10 million alien invaders in this country. We have 25, 30 million. 10 million is going to be a big number in 4 years, which is basically going to launch a soft civil war in the major cities. That's why what's happening in New York is so important, which we'll talk about later in the show. That's why what's happening in LA is so important.
So again, that's his views on immigration. He has a little nod to Project 2025 when he describes his own little project with regards to, you know, sending 10 million Latinos or 10 million people of color out of the country. So this goes to what I said at the beginning of the show, that I'm not sad for the individual. I'm sad for the state of affairs that we find ourselves in this country as a whole when it comes to political violence and political rhetoric. So it's hard for Latinos like myself and Arturo to shed tears for somebody like this, for somebody who has views like these. This may come across as a loaded question, but can you tell us how a clip like this sort of serves as a microcosm of the bigotry of the Trump administration's anti-immigrant crusade? Because let's make something very clear, that the idea that MAGA, whatever that is, and the Republican Party are two separate things. They are not. They are one in the same. And this is a fine example of that.
Yeah, you know, a lot of his rhetoric revolved around, and we've discussed this on the show, the Great Replacement conspiracy theory. And I think that a lot of people don't realize that the Great Replacement conspiracy theory blames Latinos, blames immigrants for the browning of America, right? The conspiracy theory posits that there's a concerted effort to make white people extinct, and we're supposedly those people, right? There's different variations of the Great Replacement conspiracy theory based on where you are in Europe. They think it's Muslims that are paying migrants to, you know, brown all of Europe. Here, they believe it's the Jews. And for Charlie Kirk, he always liked to mention, he never mentioned Jews or anything like that outright. He always mentioned Democrats, that this is a concerted effort by Democrats to essentially just brown the country. He had said in 2022, he said that Democrats are importing a new electorate. They're importing voters. They want to change the demographics of this country to make it more favorable to them. Like, I mean, come on. You know, he referred to immigrants as government dependent. But, like, immigrants can't be stealing jobs and be government dependent at the same time. So there's so many duplicitous ideas in this white nationalist Great Replacement conspiracy theory. And anytime you bring it up, you know, Charlie Kirk wasn't trying to debate people, right? He weaponized ignorance. He would hear you out, but then he would just come back with the same stuff. And he wasn't willing to look at data. He wasn't willing to change his mind. He was just willing to push the same narrative, and it was dangerous. You know, he talked badly about a lot of different groups, but when it comes to immigration, it's a key to understand that he was talking about non-white immigrants the whole time, of which most are Latino, right? So when people think immigration, I've said this is how this country is. You think of immigration or somebody talks about the border, everybody automatically thinks of Latinos. That's the first thought. That's how this country is programmed. 99% of the country looks at immigration in this sense. So he's, you know, intentionally putting a target on Latinos' backs. And all that rhetoric is what led us to where we are today, you know, with the Trump administration doing what they're doing. You know, he's a huge reason Trump won. the last election. He's a huge reason that the Trump administration is adopting these policies, because him and Stephen Miller have identical views when it comes to immigration and the browning of America and the so-called extinction of the white race. I've heard people call it white extinction anxiety. I'm not sure that's an actual medical term, but it's kind of a joke when you think about it, because it's white people are afraid of it's the racists, not all white people, right? Let me be clear there. But racists are afraid of black and brown people. They're afraid of people who don't look or talk like them or act like them. And I've had so many commenters recently on the MAGA side, and I've been threatened 4 times in the last 2 days by these people. But, you know, they continuously say, like, all of you guys are savages, you know, and they mean us, black people, everybody who's not white. Like, we're somehow just not living up to what's expected of us in American society and U.S. society. And like, they're always like, you know, they're trying to paint Charlie Kirk as a moderate, and their argument is he just wanted us to act right, you know, more or less is what they're saying. And I'm just like, do you guys not understand that telling non-white people to act like white people is racist, right? Like, you know, we all have different cultures, different backgrounds, different heritages. And all of that should be honored and respected. Just because white people abandoned their culture and heritage from their immigrant families who came here doesn't mean we have to.
Yeah, it's also a form of Christianized fascism.
Oh, sure,
and I have to say that the presumption that any immigrant, as soon as they step into the country, would automatically vote Democratic is absolutely absurd. I mean, I'll give you an example. My parents came from El Salvador to the U.S. in the mid-70s. My mom didn't become a U.S. citizen until 91. My dad didn't become a U.S. citizen until 98. And so between those 15, 20 years, they could not vote in any American elections. And so, again, it speaks volumes to the ignorance of the immigrant experience by these, as you said, white nationalists like Charlie Kirk. And let's make something very clear that we may be focusing on the individual in this conversation, but as you made it clear, that there are way too many people in the modern means of communications and social media like Charlie Kirk that have no business calling themselves journalists, educators, or anything of that sort. So I want to go now to a very curious clip here. As I mentioned earlier, a suspect is in custody and the motive behind this assassination is yet to be known. However, even the press conference announcing that a suspect was in custody ended up becoming problematic. Here's an interesting comment from Utah Governor Spencer Cox on the apprehension of the suspect.
For 33 hours, I was praying that if this had to happen here, that it wouldn't be one of us, that somebody drove from another state, somebody came from another country. Sadly, that prayer was not answered the way I had hoped for.
So again, that was Utah Governor Spencer Cox hoping that the shooter was an immigrant or somebody of color. And this is why I keep repeating that we shouldn't speculate, much in the same way as Spencer Cox just did there. Can you tell us about how such a flippant comment like this serves as an example of the influence of Charlie Kirk type figures in this country today? Because again, we may be focused on the individual, but there are way too many people like him right now in this social media atmosphere, and it's influencing people like the governor of Utah, apparently.
Well, yeah, you know, he emboldened this kind of thought. He's one of the reasons why it's so common in conservative politics today. You know, he normalized dog whistle type racism, and that's what that was. You know, Utah is a very white state, right? It struck me as he was hoping it was going to be a black or brown person, you know, I mean, because, and if anybody watches that clip on the internet, if you look at Kash Patel's face, who's right behind him, he can tell that that's a dog whistle. Kash Patel knows a dog whistle when he hears one, and his reaction to that statement.
People can't see us because we're on the radio, but we were just as stunned when we heard that clip just now.
Yeah, you know, and it's just crazy to me that he would say something like that, being a governor, and that's how tone deaf Charlie Kirk has made people. He didn't even realize that what, or maybe he did. Maybe it was intentional. I don't know. But he said he prayed for 33 hours. I doubt that. But he said he prayed for 33 hours that it wasn't one of them. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, he meant, you know, somebody from Utah. He was hoping it wasn't somebody who lived in Utah. And, honestly, I think he was referring to he was hoping it wasn't a Mormon because, you know, he says we don't do that here. But there's been a couple of mass shooters come out of Utah. So even saying we don't do that here was a lie because there's, I think somebody mentioned it recently. And I've had a few, you know, more liberal and leftist type Christians say, you know, they noticed that he said his prayer wasn't answered. And they're like, actually, the logic is every prayer is answered. And apparently God said no. And I laughed at that because, I mean, I've heard that every prayer is answered. And sometimes God says no. And you know, at the end of the day, you hear that statement and deep down, he knew it was going to be a white guy. He knew it was going to be a white man. And he was praying that it wasn't. You see what I'm saying? Because the standard in this country is when something like this happens, it's more likely than not a white man. And deep down, he had to know. And deep down, yeah, he wanted to play on the whole criminal migrant narrative. That's what he was pushing for. Did that 100%. That's what everybody is taking that as when it comes to dog whistles, is he was hoping that he can jump in on the fascist propaganda from Homeland Security talking about, you know, we're arresting the worst of the worst and, you know, pinning everything wrong with this country on immigrants. And that's exactly what he was hoping to do. Cash Patel knew it. You could tell by his face, his reaction. Everybody in that room knew it was going to be more than likely going to be a white man. There's no black man out there who's going to go climb on the roof, or a Latino for that matter, and whip out a sniper rifle and sit up there and wait for Charlie Kirk to, you know, take him out. That's not something we do. That's something mass shooters and things like this are an issue in the white community, period. And people like us and black people, we don't have access to this. And until white people start confronting the people in their proximity about these things, like this kid told his parents Charlie Kirk is coming, you know, I don't like him because this and this, this and this, you know, those should have all been red flags. And, you know, at some point you got to stop your kid, or you got to stop your buddy or your coworker and be like, dude, no, it isn't like this. You need to tone it down.
Yeah. As I told you before we started recording today, I had a lot of trepidations as to how to approach this conversation and how best to deal with what is still an ongoing case right now with the assassination of Charlie Kirk. But the comments from the governor of Utah really galvanized me, among many other things, to have this conversation, because that comment, however subtle it was, really raised the red flag for both you and I with regards to how institutionalized xenophobia towards immigrants and Latinos and people in color in general has become in the society, that in a case like this, even in this dark hour in Utah, the governor was hoping for some degree of something that would take some degree of attention away from Charlie Kirk's rhetoric that, as you said, was of his own creation. Again, we are treading lightly here in this conversation, but it just reflects the sad state of affairs when it comes to political conversations. Now, I do have another clip here. As you mentioned before, Charlie Kirk has had a lot of perverse views on guns and mass shootings. And I do have the clip here that we mentioned earlier. So let's take a listen.
Never live in a society when you have an armed citizenry and you won't have a single gun death. That is nonsense. It's drivel. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year, so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights.
So that was Charlie Kirk's views on guns and mass shootings. And before I continue this conversation, I just want to say right now that in collecting these clips, it was very hard to find these clips, whether it be on Google or on YouTube, because there's been a lot of whitewashing with regards to his legacy and the things they said in the past. Even if you go to MSNBC or CNN, they sort of mention it in passing, but it's not necessarily the central point of Charlie Kirk's life, as it should be. This is his rhetoric that we're playing here. And I just can't help but point out that it's been very hard to find these clips because it's been kind of buried in the last few days, and you have to sort of find these clips now. So one thing I would say about what we just heard is that we could describe this as right-wing. We could describe it as reactionary. I would describe this as a very nihilistic view on guns. So does commentary like this lend itself to the importance of lowering the rhetoric of political violence right now, lowering the rhetoric of political conversation? Because, you know, again, we're treading lightly, but that, what he just said, was insane.
Yeah, you know, and he's normalizing gun death. He's normalizing murder. You know, he normalized what happened to him. He normalized what happened to, you know, when those Democrat lawmakers in Minnesota were killed. You know, he made a mockery of that. You know, so did a couple of lawmakers, Republican lawmakers. You know, they talked their trash. They all made the same, you know, unverified claims way too early, you know, and all these things. And then it turns out to be another right winger. And then all of a sudden they become quiet.
By the way, before you continue, that clip I played was in response to a school shooting in Nashville some 2 or 3 years ago, but please continue.
No, yeah. And, you know, it's just so problematic because not only is he normalizing the shooting and killing of people as just the cost of having the Second Amendment, which is ridiculous, he's also villainizing black people, Latinos. Like, he's villainizing anybody who's not a straight white male. And when you villainize everybody who's not a straight white male, you drive straight white males to commit violence on other people, on everybody else. Like, you gave them justification. And then when you say that a few gun deaths every year is the cost of the Second Amendment, you're validating those justifications. So, you know, language like this, not just from Kirk, but, you know, the Nick Fuentes and everybody else, have led to a rise in, you know, hate crimes, to the explosion of hate groups. You know, we're still, even though hate groups kind of fluctuate up and down a little bit, we're still, you know, have at least 1,000 in this country. And, you know, they're just constantly targeting people. I've been threatened 4 times in the last 2 days. I've also been called the S word. I don't want to say it on the air. I don't know how many times, you know, at least a dozen, if not more. And these are all from people who follow Charlie Kirk, who are trying to argue with me that he's not racist, that they're not racist. Here they are using racial slurs against me, and they're doing it to Dr. Wiltz, you know, who I did that live stream with the other day. They're calling her the N-word all over the place. She's a black woman. It's just nonstop. And right now, a lot of Charlie Kirk followers are trying to paint him as some sort of a moderate. But at the end of the day, you know, great replacement conspiracy theory is not a moderate position. You know, saying you would never fly on a plane because there's black pilots and you don't know if they're qualified, that's not a moderate position. So, you know, when the media is talking about political violence and they're kind of just really glossing over all the racism and all his own rhetoric that has led to this escalation in political violence, it's a disservice to people. And it puts people like us at greater risk because they're not addressing the overall problem, the bigger problem. Political violence in the United States is largely a right-wing problem. The vast majority of them are still, at least 3/4 of these types of political killings are right-wing. And they're trying to, you know, the whole time Charlie Kirk was painting Democrats and liberals and leftists as, you know, he called us a death cult. He called, I say us, but he called anybody who wasn't on his side a death cult. You know, he accused black people, Latinos, all of us of being much more violent than white people. And historically, that's just not accurate. and it's not accurate in the modern day either. You know, he painted all of us as an enemy, and a lot of his followers believe that leftist violence is more prominent than right-wing violence, and it's just not true. And that's the kind of thing that this kind of proves, that Charlie Kirk was never interested in an honest debate, not an honest broker, because you provide him the data and he just tosses it aside and continues the rhetoric. He is weaponizing ignorance, weaponizing willful ignorance. And it's a normal thing among young conservatives right now. And young conservatives who don't have the life experience, who don't understand our political history or the history of racism as good as a 51-year-old like myself, or you know, somebody who's been in the game a little longer, they believe this because they don't have context to fall back on. And now, since they're weaponizing ignorance, when you try to provide them that context, they just ignore it and they toss it aside. You know, I've been accused of being an anti-white racist I don't know how many times the last few days, despite me posting videos talking about all the cool white people I know that are accepting, that embrace our culture, that embrace, you know, people, and they embrace each other. Like, there are a lot of cool white people in this country, and you can't tell me otherwise. So, like, how are you going to call me anti-white when I'm sitting here talking about all the cool white people in my life that are in my proximity that I can actually talk to and maybe try to make a difference and try to, you know, expand some ideas to help try to tackle this problem? I don't know why me, a Latino, is doing this in the white community when the white people really need to be doing this. You know what I mean? You know, you can't count on black people to talk to racist white people to help solve the problem. It's a white people problem. White people need to address it. So, like, I often talk about this, how, you know, how people fled Twitter because of the Nazis and went to Blue Sky? That's a big problem. People start talking about Substack. Let's go away from Substack because there's Nazis there. Fam, there are Nazis everywhere. You can't run from them. If you run from them, they win. If you run from a guy like Charlie Kirk, he wins. You have to challenge these narratives, and the best way to do so is by talking to the people in your immediate proximity so that maybe they can go and talk to people and maybe more rational discussions begin to happen. Because this whole running from the problem doesn't work, and we can't solve it on our own. We need white people to step up and do something.
And certainly whitewashing doesn't help.
No, it does not.
The conversation either.
Yeah.
Which is why we're playing these clips, to shed light on the type of person that he was, and why, again, we need to, like, cool down the political rhetoric that would lead to these sort of tragedies. So we're going to take a break right here. We're speaking with freelance writer Arturo Dominguez following the death of Charlie Kirk. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned. That was UB40, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in occupied Washington. Reminding everyone that you also follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and we're spending the hour with freelance writer Arturo Dominguez on the fallout following the assassination of far-right activist Charlie Kirk. So as if his previous comments were not heinous enough, his Christianized fascism, Arturo, grew even more with his organization, Turning Points USA. As an example of this, here's another clip of Charlie that sort of combines his LGBTQ bigotry and his Islamophobia, all under the guise of Christianized fascism.
The spiritual battle is coming to the West, and the enemies are wokeism or Marxism combining with Islamism to go after what we call the American way of life. And the American way of life is very simple. I want to be able to get married, buy a home, have kids, allow them to ride their bike till the sun goes down, send them to a good school, have a low crime neighborhood, not to have my kid be taught the lesbian, gay, transgender garbage in their school. While also not having them have to hear the Muslim call to prayer 5 times a day. That's important. We want the American way of life, which is, by the way, Christendom. Christians, our sacrifice, our toil, our vision, the outgrowth of the scriptures gave us Western civilization. And this is where I think is a great rallying cry. Doesn't matter if you're Hispanic, doesn't matter if you're Asian, doesn't matter if you're black or white. Everybody, if you are Christian and Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, these two threats are combining forces to come after us. And it's time that the church stands and rises up against it.
So that was Charlie Kirk, I think, at CPAC, of all places, given that rant. And again, he combines his LGBTQ bigotry with Islamophobia, all under the guise of Christianized fascism. Now, is it racist? Yes. Is it homophobic? Yes. Is it transphobic? Yes. Is it xenophobic? Yes. Is it sexist? Yes. But all these things, I don't think we mention often enough how nihilistic these sort of views are, not just from the individual, not just from his followers, the entire right-wing movement, in my opinion. This nihilism that permeates all of these issues in the background underneath. I want to give you a question here, but I don't know how to form it. So just give me your thoughts on what we just heard here.
Well, first, I want to point out that a lot of Charlie Kirk supporters will point to stuff like this, where he said, it doesn't matter if you're Hispanic, doesn't matter if you're black, doesn't matter if this, that, and the other, right? How can he be racist if he says those things? Well, you know, you can be racist if you have black friends, right? The thing with Charlie Kirk is, the only black folks he's okay with, or Latinos, or whoever that he's okay with, are people he sees that are beneath him but agree with him, right? So everything he's ever said about black fathers, you know, lies about them not being present when they're the most present fathers out of anybody. You know, there's data that shows this. The whole Christian nationalism thing, right? When he says, doesn't matter if you're Hispanic, you're black, whatever, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to spread that. He's trying to spread the anti-LGBTQ bigotry. A lot of what he said there, like you look at Trump's Religious Liberty Commission, full of white Christian nationalists, one Jewish guy. And as a member, they have some Muslims, one guy who converted from Christianity, he's a white guy, as advisors. But in Trump's Religious Liberty Commission, if you look at it, it's not about religious liberty at all. It's about Christian nationalism. They're talking about one thing, one religion and one only. You know, the one Jewish guy that's there is as far right as they are. Very anti-trans, very anti-LGBTQ in general, very anti-same-sex marriage. A lot of what the Religious Liberty Commission does is exactly what Charlie Kirk just said in that clip. They're targeting the LGBTQ community. You know, they're also trying to suppress other religions while making Christianity, which version, who knows, right? Because there's like, what, 5,000 versions of evangelism here in the U.S., and you know, it's just crazy to hear. Like, these clips are hard to listen to.
Yeah.
You know, for people like us, for Latinos and stuff, like when we write about these things and we talk about this, this is a difficult process for us, because like we see how it affects our families. Like when Charlie Kirk was shot in this house, like we were in shock, but while, you know, we can show empathy maybe for his kids because they lost their father, the sympathy for Kirk, like you said at the beginning, is just not there, because he inflicted so much harm on us with rhetoric like what we just heard. You know, that same rhetoric is not just targeting the LGBTQ community. It's targeting women as well. Like you mentioned, the sexism, want to have babies and own a house and all this stuff. This is the typical white Christian nationalist rolled into one. their safe community where their kids can play outside isn't a white community. They want to be segregated from society. A guy like Charlie Kirk will accept living in a pluralistic society as long as he doesn't have to participate in it. He wants to live in his lily white gated community away from everything he perceives as a problem. And everything he perceives as a problem starts with being a little bit darker than them, not being a straight white male, a woman with the freedoms that they have to vote, to work, to do what they want. You know, a lot of these guys are trying to push for taking away women's right to vote. You know, there was a clip recently of Kevin Sorbo's son. He says he talked to one woman, friend of his, who said she would gladly give up her right to vote if it meant 10,000 Democrat women can't vote ever again. And I was like, my first reaction was like, bull, there's no way that a woman told you that. That sounds very made up. And secondly, it's very telling, you know?
And again, it sounds nihilistic. That's just nihilism.
It does.
That's just nihilism.
Right, right. And that's another thing that's growing on the internet. The nihilism, the misanthropy, or however you say that. I don't use that word often, but there's a lot of these new little hate groups that use, you know, all these words, and they're very nihilist. They embrace a lot of different forms of hate. They commit acts of violence, you know, and they skirt just being able to be designated as a hate group. But there's a lot of this that's going on, and a lot of it is driven by this kind of Christian nationalist rhetoric. And, you know, we can't deny that it's a problem. And, you know, it's what in Latin America we call Cristo fascism, right? That's exactly what it is. And that's where we're headed. What they want is control. They want non-white people to act like white people. They want us to act however they want us to. You know, they want to set the ground rules for how we eat.
Marco Rubio.
Right. That's what they want. They want a Marco Rubio. They want Ted Cruz. They want all of us to be just like them. When it comes, they want black people to be like Candace Owens, for example. You know what I'm saying? So like it's just insane to me how they can say they are not racist while parroting everything the Klan has parroted for decades. And this is why I call, like, a lot of Republicans in Congress right now, they hate me, you know, because I call them clean cut Klansmen. We're all with K's, because that's what they are. They're not wearing their robes. They're parroting. Christian nationalism is what the KKK was founded on. Everything about the Klan was Christian nationalism. Everything about the Reconstruction era. And what they're doing now is they're bringing the Klan's belief mainstream. The Klan referred to everything they didn't like as communism. They didn't like women having the right to vote. They didn't want civil rights. They didn't want equal rights for black people. They didn't want to live in the same communities. This is all the same thing. And it's all being regurgitated because of my new favorite phrase, weaponized ignorance. You know, you have a lot of kids, a lot of these teenagers, you're just getting into college, they don't have the knowledge of the political history. You say something about this sounds like the Klan, and they automatically dismiss you. They tell you that discredits your argument because you're referring to them as Nazi aligned or Klansmen. They will automatically dismiss you, just like Piers Morgan says, and just like a lot of these other commentators say. The minute you make these accusations, it essentially invalidates everything you have to say. And that's a way to shut down a real conversation about the reality of what they're doing. And, you know, it's just happening more and more. And I think it's a huge, like I said earlier, huge disservice that the media is just not addressing this. And they're just acting like this isn't happening in light of Kirk's murder. You know, they're just pretending that, like, I've seen so many articles about talking about how Charlie Kirk was doing politics the right way.
No, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't. No. He wasn't an honest broker. He wasn't having honest debates. He wasn't reaching across the aisle. He was interacting with people across the aisle so he can mock them on social media for clicks, because the dude is worth $12 million and has tons of property and, you know, real estate for a reason. And that's because he weaponized those clips on places like TikTok.
Yeah, let's not forget the fact that he also put out a list of leftist college professors, however he put it, among many other things. So while there may be a lot of clips in the public record on YouTube of a lot of his beliefs, there's even more behind the scenes that we probably have not been able to get to on today's show alone that have been problematic, to put it politely. I'll say that. So I have another clip here, and this is Charlie Kirk about 2 or 3 years ago describing his opposition to Juneteenth several years back. Let's take a listen.
And we opposed Juneteenth becoming a federal holiday as it happened. And yes, it is the day that it is mandatory to work at Turning Point USA. On its face value, I have no problem with it. I think it's wonderful to say, okay, liberation of slaves, all that good stuff. The issue is that the entire point of it, as per postmodernists do and deconstructionists, is to subvert July 4th. That has always been the agenda. That there is a Black Independence Day and a National Independence Day, the same way that they have a Black national anthem that plays before NFL games, that they have Black-only dormitories and Black-only math classes. It is a neo-segregationist federal holiday. But now we have a full week of Juneteenth festivities. At some point, you got to wonder, and this, the answer to the question is actually very simple. Why do these people need so much celebration?
Okay, so I don't know what an all-Black math class means. I don't know if he invented that. It's just another one of his incoherent racist rants that, again, is out in the public record, whether it be on Google or YouTube or wherever. This is in the public record of his political legacy. Now, I want to get your thoughts on what he said here, considering that you're in Texas and the good people of Texas were the ones that really pushed for Juneteenth to be a national holiday, just so people know.
So one of the things is, when I first moved to Texas in the 90s, that was one of the first things I learned about, was Juneteenth. I saw stuff on the news and, you know, Juneteenth celebrations coming up. I'm like, what the hell is Juneteenth? So I started asking around and started learning about it. And, you know, I came from a very diverse community in Jersey. When I came here, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be surrounded by, you know, a diverse community. I asked all my Black friends at school what it was, and they were explaining it to me, and I was in shock at what Juneteenth stood for. I did not know that it took 2 years before the slaves in Galveston were liberated. And yeah, Charlie Kirk is right. There are different liberation days for Black people than there are for white people. You know, July 4th, Independence Day, was not Independence Day for Black people. Like, do some reading, you know what I mean? Like, come on now, that this is well documented. So yeah, of course there's two different liberation days. And dude, let me tell you, Juneteenth in Houston is awesome. Yeah, it lasts a week, if not two. And you go to parks and there's festivities and there's food and there's just, it's fun. It's a blast. And you learn a lot, not just about your community and your neighbors, but about the history of the city and of Galveston, and it really makes you understand why Houston is a progressive city in the middle of a blood red state. You know, there are millions of people here who respect, you know, the history of this town and the discussions about race riots and all these things, you know, with the Buffalo Soldiers. It's a story I've done before. These things are all discussed very openly here, in school, in the public, wherever you go, and Republicans hate it, as you can hear from Charlie Kirk. So, you know, the all-Black math class, that's a knock on HBCUs, because Charlie Kirk is a very big proponent of spreading the idea that HBCUs are Black-only schools. They're not. There are white kids. There are a lot of Latinos that go to HBCUs. And HBCUs are very accepting schools. But he won't tell you that.
No.
You know, despite the data, he ignores the data, just like he does on black crime, just like he, you know, he wants to talk about data in Black communities, but he doesn't want to talk about how 85 or 86% of white people kill white people. You know what I mean? Like, it's a proximity thing. It's not, doesn't have anything to do with the Black community being more violent than the white community You know, there's a lot of murder suicide in the white community. Happens every day in Houston, sometimes two or three times in a single day. You know, that's the toxic masculinity that comes out. He doesn't want to talk about that, right? Because to him, a few, you know, murder suicides a year is the price we have to pay for the Second Amendment, right? That's essentially his logic. So the whole targeting Juneteenth, mentioning the Black National Anthem, none of that is necessary in any kind of discourse, right?
And
he says these people, and that's intentional. You don't know how many times I've heard you people, or a pastor came at me on Substack, and he says, instead of saying you people, he said you folks, like that's any better. And then he called me a two-legged goat something, whatever. Okay. So I laughed at that. But anyway, you know, that's the environment we're in, where, you know, in order to move the country forward, we need to be working collectively, right? And then here you have a guy who's funded by billionaires, by the way.
Right? Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know, the heiress from Publix grocery stores, the Uline family, those Uline catalogs you get for boxes and stuff that businesses all over this country use. They've put $100 million or more into Turning Point USA. They gave Turning Point USA $108 million to try to elect Donald Trump. Like, he is funded by billionaires. And a common argument you hear from the right is, oh, billionaires weaponize race and this and that and all this stuff to keep us divided so they could do what they're... Well, there you go. Charlie Kirk is your pawn. He's the one being paid by billionaires to drive wedges in this country. And to move, like I was saying, to move this country forward, the discussion about Juneteenth or HBCUs or any of this stuff is irrelevant. But they create culture wars for that very purpose, because if they actually tackled the issues and voiced how they feel about actual issues, they wouldn't be able to have a debate.
See, this is why I enjoy having you on the show so very often, because as a journalist, you took a proactive approach to learning and understanding what Juneteenth was. The Charlie Kirks of the world take the reactionary approach and just hate it and dislike it because, one, they don't understand it, and two, because of their own inherent bigotries, whether it be race, one's sexual orientation, anything and everything in between. Now, I would ask you another question, but we're out of time. And really, what can we learn from Charlie Kirk's legacy? Not much, really. What can we learn from the circumstances surrounding his death? Will we learn anything from what happened with regards to his death? I don't know. I seriously doubt it. The number of mass shootings and gun violence in this country and the lack of any action done afterwards leads me to believe that such incidents like these are just going to continue to happen, which again reflects the sad state of affairs of political conversation and political rhetoric in this country. But what we can't do and what we shouldn't do is whitewash somebody like this with regards to his legacy, with regards to what he said, and with regards to what he has willingly put out in the public record. Again, nobody here in this conversation, and I would assume that nobody who's listening to us, is really going to shed any tears for an avowed white nationalist. So doing this show is a labor of love, but this conversation in particular has been an exercise in frustration to what Arturo said earlier, which is weaponized ignorance. How do we approach weaponized ignorance? I don't know. It remains to be seen. And that's the only way I can end this conversation today. So we've been speaking with freelance writer Arturo Dominguez. Arturo, hopefully we'll have a better conversation, but considering the seriousness of what's taking place, what you've said today has been enlightening. Thank you very much once again for being on the show with us.
I really appreciate it, Oscar. This one, I knew it was going to be intense. Listening to Charlie Kirk was a lot harder than I anticipated, as much as I've had to listen to him the last few days, you know, reporting about whitewashing his legacy. So yeah, it needed to be done. I don't mind going through that for that, because there's a bigger purpose, and that's addressing these issues that are really afflicting this country.
Yeah, there's no other way to like deal with it the right way. No. There's no right formula for it at all whatsoever. So with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone again that you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the show. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnestad. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs is warning the last remaining lifelines for civilians in Gaza City are collapsing amid intensified military operations. Over the last 5 days, 11 UNRWA premises serving as emergency shelters for 11,000 people in Gaza City have been damaged or destroyed after taking direct hits from Israeli forces. Some residents have taken to the sea using boats to flee south with their belongings, while others displaced from Gaza City have pitched tents in landfills. The United States once again vetoed a UN Security Council resolution for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza and the release of hostages. All 14 of the other Security Council members voted in support of it, which described the humanitarian situation in Gaza as catastrophic and called on Israel to lift all restrictions on aid. In floor remarks before the vote, U.S. diplomat Morgan Ortagas explained the U.S.'s position.
U.S. opposition to this resolution will come as no surprise. It fails to condemn Hamas or recognize Israel's right to defend itself, and it wrongly legitimizes the false narratives benefiting Hamas, which have sadly found currency in this council.
After the 14-1 vote, the Algerian delegate apologized.
Forgive us, in particular in Gaza, where fire consumes, where rubble suffocate. Forgive us because this council could not save your children.
It's a day of solidarity with the Summit Flotilla, which aims to end Israel's siege of Gaza. Growing fallout after the suspension of the Jimmy Kimmel Show and the Trump administration's pledge to go after its adversaries, even from the ranks of right-wing conservatives like Tucker Carlson and former Vice President Mike Pence, who've warned against going after free speech. Democrats Thursday introduced the NOPE Act, No Political Enemies Act. Here's Senator Chris Murphy.
The No Political Enemies Act creates a specific defense for those that are being targeted for political reasons. It builds real consequences for government officials when they use the power of the government to target speech that is protected by the First Amendment. And it gives an ability to recover attorney's fees when someone is the subject of government harassment.
Meanwhile, Silicon Valley Representative Democrat Ro Khanna told members of Congress Thursday he will move to subpoena FCC Chair Brendan Carr, who urged ABC to take action against Kimmel before it moved to suspend him over comments he made about the assassination of Charlie Kirk. 2024 was the hottest year in nearly two centuries, 175 years of observations, according to a new report from the United Nations World Meteorological Organization, the WMO. It warns this is causing growing pressure on the world's water resources, particularly glacier melting. 2024 was the third straight year of widespread glacier loss across all regions. Glaciers provide the largest source of fresh water in the world. Celeste Saulo is WMO Secretary General.
Glaciers lost 450 gigatons. This is the equivalent of a huge block of ice, 7 kilometers height, 7 kilometers wide, and 7 kilometers deep, or 180 million Olympic swimming pools, enough to add about 1.2 millimeters to global sea level. increasing the risk of floods for hundreds of millions of people on the coasts.
Intense heat comes as Europe experienced catastrophic fires. Saolo also says increasingly warm air temperatures allow more water to be held in the atmosphere, leading to heavier rainfalls, which explains catastrophic flooding in Asia and Africa. She says the various extreme weather events around the